forward proceeds. And let me just say, I received a correspondence from the speaker dated 28 August 2019. It reads as follows. Dear Mr. Magwanishe, your correspondence dated 27 August 2019 bears reference. The correspondence will be referred to the National Assembly Rules Committee with a view to the Rules Committee developing the necessary procedures to give respect to Section 194 of the Constitution. Regards, Ms. T. Karat Mudisa, Speaker of the National Assembly. I thought it would be important that we just give an update. And because it was the decision of the meeting that I should write to the speaker, which I did on the 27th of August, and on the 28th of August, the speaker responded. So now the letter is no more with us, it is with the Rules Committee, and we will take it from there. Today, honorable members will be receiving a briefing by the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services on their operating model. They would want to welcome you, Judge, and your delegation, and you are welcome to your time. And I think since we are meeting for the first time, I think it will be important for us to introduce ourselves. I am Bolinami Magwanishe. I'm from Kaudeo, member of the ANC. I am the chair of the committee.
I am Paul Anola, a member of the community, representing the ANC.
Good morning, welcome to Cape Town. I'm Wilma Neostruchen. Voicing for me is not my voice, it's my sign language interpreter, Trudy, and then my other interpreter is Delphin. I'm a member of this committee from the Western Cape, representing the ANC.
Good morning, I'm Bill Breckenbach. I'm a member of this committee and a member of the Democratic
Alliance. Good morning, I'm James Silk, a member of this committee from the Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Werner Rohn, DA.
Steve Swart from the ACDP, and please forgive me, I need to be leaving, no disrespect intended, in a little while. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Judge. Generally, small parties are overstressed, so they jump from one meeting to the other. And that is why Mr. Swart is apologizing. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Mr. We know Mr. Swart has been very supportive in these meetings, so we understand his position. We will try to help him that his party becomes bigger when he doesn't have to be so big. Anyway, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. We have been looking forward to this occasion. I am Johan van der Westhuizen. I'm the inspecting judge. I will later say something about the term of office. Before that, I was a judge in the Constitutional Court for 12 years. Next to me is Mr. Vic Messer, who is the CEO of JICS. Ms. Mpo Mchali is here in the part of our head office in Pretoria, and part is still in Cape Town. She's in the Cape Town part of the head office, researcher. And Mr. Leonard D'Souza has been with the organization for a long time. He is the director or the head of inspections. So should I proceed? Or, yeah. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps if you must give me an indication of time, because we have so many things we can talk the whole day. But the topic is our model, what do you call it, operating model. And linked to that is the so-called business case, which is where we hope we will be going. But before we get to the operating model, which Mr. the CEO will deal with briefly, please allow me to make a few general introductory remarks. As you know, GETS is created and regulated in certain sections in Chapters 9 and 10 of the Correctional Services Act. The Act says that GICS is an independent office under the control of the Act of the Inspecting Judge. It says that the inspecting judge identifies a person who must be CEO, and then the National Commissioner of Correctional Services must appoint. Then the Act says, and I will later come back to that, the Act says a number of times, it says the CEO is accountable to the National Commissioner for money, for example. Now, we fully understand that the CEO must be accountable to someone. But at the same time, the Act says the CEO is under the control of the inspecting judge. So there is a problem to which we will come back around independence. At the moment, there is a court judgment reserved here in the Western Cape, and I'll tell you a bit more about that. But just generally, before, I think Mr. Misser will explain our present model, and then I will talk about the way forward. But let me throw in a number of other things, because we don't see you very often, and whatever you would like to say or ask, we would be happy to answer. As you know, there was, or you probably know, there was an incident at St. Albans in Port Elizabeth 2 days ago. We are looking into it, and an official was injured, but an inmate died. And with my warped sense of humor, I smile a bit when I see the official statements when it says that minimum use of force resulted in the death of an inmate. So one wonders what maximum use of force would mean. But anyway, these are the official terms that people get caught up in because the legislation mentions it. So Albans in general, when I was before this committee the last time, some members mentioned the conditions in St. Albans. We were there recently. We can talk about that. Other recent incidents that we are working on is the stabbing murder with scissors and rape that took place in Goedemoot near Alibaba North recently, well, 2-3 months ago, and the situation at that center since then. There we are in contact with the National Commissioner, but anyway, I will talk to you about that. The main problem, of course, as everybody knows, is overcrowding. South African centers, we have 243 centers. Two of them are privately run. Only three centers are not overcrowded. The two private ones and the Supermax facility in Kokstad, where we are also busy with a report that those are not overcrowded. Maybe one or two others, and of course small ones, but generally 150% full on across the board. Now that leads to a lot of problems. The DCS has a shortage of staff. Many positions are vacant. Overcrowded places find it very difficult to arrange meal times, etc., the way it should be. There's a lot of gang activity. The Western Cape is notorious for the gangs, but I could tell you anecdotally that I've seen worse in places like Potchefstroom and Klerksdorp, where men of 17, 18 are gang members, and when you ask them, why are you a gang member, what do? They say, we kill each other. And when you ask them why, there is still a rational reason. Gangsterism has some rationality. People make money, it's a kind of a business and so on. But the level of desperation which one encounters in those places is that the only reason why the gang exists is to kill people of the other gang. And the only reason is because they kill us. And if you then ask, what if you go to jail, the first answer is, I won't. I'm talking about trial away people. I won't because the witnesses won't recognize me. And if I go to jail, there is life in prison as well. And if you then ask, but what if you get killed? The answer is, that's so be it. That's just one of those things. Anyway, we can come back to that. So gangsterism, and then you are aware of a range of distinct facilities. We are busy with a report, but every time I want, we, previous time when we were here, we showed you some pictures, those of you who were still here. And one of my veteran inspectors, who was very much involved in the struggle and so on, he said, show these pictures to Parliament because you will make the mothers and fathers cry. So some of you said you spoiled my day, but it is still the same. There's a shortage of uniforms. At some places there's a shortage of shoes. So in places like Elliottsdale, which we saw in the middle of winter, people are wearing these little plucky things that the family buy at the nearest pet store or whatever. Facilities, St. Albans looks very bad. And there are two or three places made out of tin, out of corrugated iron. And then, in addition to that, some of the state-of-the-art places and state-of-the-art equipment is not used because people do not know how to use them or because they broke down and cannot be repaired. I've seen a 3 million rand metal detector that has been in a box, not opened, for 3-4 years. And, of course, in places like Tweloteli, Kimberley, I don't know now, but when we lost, it's a state-of-the-art building, but they don't have hot water. And the explanation is that the engineers cannot repair the pumping system. It is too sophisticated for local engineers. That kind of problem we have with locks, the new automatic sort of locks, centrally controlled and so on. Some places are quite good, let me always be fair. Some places are some of the new youth centers here at Brunsley, and for example in Papiansburg outside Tswane, those one does not have to be ashamed of anywhere in the world. And I've seen places in London, in Tunisia recently, in Portugal, and I can't remember, and in America, in the United States. Some of those visits I did at my own cost when I was there for academic, for conferences, etc. So some of our facilities we don't have to be ashamed of at all, but others are very, very bad, and we would like to bring our full report to you on that. These corrugated iron facilities, you can imagine the heat. At one place, I think it goes outside the regulations of the civil service. So if you want me to come to Parliament, this is what I'm doing now. But at one or two of these places, I left the prison and went to the nearest Pakistani store in the town and bought them from my own pocket a few fans to just cool down the place where a social worker is trying to teach people to do sewing or some other thing. So facilities is a big problem. Let me not dwell on the problems. We can come back. All of this, of course, then leads to the violence. Very brief word. I will come back to our independence. Generally, we are doing fine. I think we are doing, if I may boast, I was appointed 3.5 years ago. The organization, then the morale was quite low. Some of our people who have been there, like Mr. D'Souza, were working very hard, but they had the feeling that they were not taken seriously. They had the feeling that, and the media asked me many times, if we speak on a report, they say, but now, what now? What's going to happen? You've said these things about mentally ill inmates, about overcrowding, what now? Do they take you seriously? One of the things we did We had fairly regular meetings with the previous minister, and actually both the previous minister and deputy minister were very supportive in terms of the values we stand for. We have tried very hard to have a good relationship with DCS, with Correctional Services. One of the things encouraged by the previous deputy minister was to lift the public profile of JICS. So soon after my appointment, during 2016-17, we designed a whole new corporate identity. We have our own logo. Apparently, we were not even allowed to use the government department state coat of arms. We have our own colors. We have a spokesperson now. And generally, we are doing a lot better. At the time when I took over, there was a long vacancy in the judge situation, and the CEO had been acting for 4 years. And even in this committee, members of parliament then warned me privately and said the situation is illegal. We appointed a CEO, and we have been appointing quite a number of people. So generally things are looking a lot better, but there are problems. Everybody, I suppose, talks about resources, but with regard to an incident such as the recent one now in St. Albans 2 days ago, we cannot really compete as far as investigation is concerned with DCS and the police. Now, quite frankly, we have been disappointed with the conduct of the police in these incidents, as well as the National Prosecuting Authority. The notorious example that I always mention is a few months after my appointment, I saw a video of what happened in Brunsley, which on the face of it looks prima facie like murder, nothing else than murder. And only now, after we've had discussions with the newly appointed national director and several other people, do we hear that prosecutions may follow in that case. And that is now 4.5 years after the incident. The police often seem to have an attitude that it's not really their territory. And, yeah, I'm going to say too many confidential things now, but we can talk about it later. But when we hear about something like in St. Albans, it is difficult for us to get there immediately with our numbers and the distances and so on. And what we then encounter, which brings me to the relationship with the department, we have been trying very hard to make it clear to the department that we are not their enemies or their opponents. We are not there to embarrass them. And publicly, they agree. But we've had situations where they seem to be very unhappy when we issue statements, even statements that seem to support them. For example, a recent one on overcrowding. The statement supported them by saying their job is very difficult, etc., etc. And then we get messages from them saying we are trying to upstage them and steal their limelight and stuff like that. Of course, whenever there is a change in administration, ministry, everywhere else, people need time to get all the correct facts and understand what's going on. That was the case with me as a judge. When I mentioned to the previous minister, my staff say that the DCS staff are deliberately frustrating us, but I don't believe that is the case. The minister said to me, "No, I can tell you it is the case. They do the same with me." So they do it with anybody who they know is in a position for a fixed period. So it takes the judge or the new minister, I don't know about the committee, a year or two to figure out what's going on, and by then you're almost on the way out. So I can't report on any, well, there are a few small incidents, but generally I cannot report on any overt tension or anything like that, but we are often very frustrated. Sometimes on an administrative financial level, and that I'm coming to, sometimes on what appears to be an attitude that we must keep quiet and give them the chance to finish. But some of these incidents are complex. I'll talk about one later. And it takes months and months and months for them. And I don't understand why we cannot sometimes make a preliminary report and say, this is what it looks like to us, but we are waiting for their findings. Of course, as a judge, I have to be careful. I cannot issue reports and left, right, and center throw out allegations and insinuations of corruption and whatever else, because one cannot go on hearsay. But for example, on the facilities, whenever we ask, the typical situation is we meet with the people at a particular center, then they say it's very bad, look how the rainwater comes through the office of the care center, and it's the fault of their financial person who now happens to be the acting area commissioner. Then that person joins the meeting, then they all agree it is the fault of the regional office in Bloemfontein. Then somebody from the regional office happens to be around and joins the meeting, then they blame it on head office, and ultimately everybody blames it on public works. Yeah. Now that link I have not been able to decipher. That link between DCS, and we are planning a report in which we are going to ask questions, not give answers. Because confidentially, people very high up in DCS tell you there is corruption in public works. And they mention fences and building contracts. But I'm not the Zambia Commission, and I don't have many years to make a finding. I cannot, as a judge, put myself on the line by saying, oh, I hear it's corruption. So that kind of situation takes a long time to figure out. We are busy with several projects like that. So, Ted, sorry for the long time. This is an introduction. You can interrupt any time. But if you want us to continue first, the CEO will give a very brief just explanation of our model now, and then we will talk about the way forward.
No, thank you very much. That is quite interesting.
Good morning. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Thank you, Judge. I have already submitted a document that actually spells out the operating model currently in which JIGS exists. And also, I've included in this package for you to show you how far has JIGS come in terms of developing a model in order for it to become totally independent in future. And that's contained in a business case that has also been submitted to the Office of the Honourable Chair. Honourable Members, Honourable Chair, JIGS actually operates within a domain of the Correctional Services Act, specifically in relations with Chapter 9 and 10. This is where we get our mandate from, and this is what Judge has been saying about the word control, that this organization is under the control of the inspecting judge. Now, what we need to talk about is actually how JIGS currently operates and under what system and what constraints it currently operates. Now, if one looks at the administration of JIGS, it has a staff complement of 86 people permanently employed, which constitutes its establishment. In this 86, it includes the inspecting judge, it includes the CEO and some top management, and then filters down into the organization. But beyond this, Honorable Chair, we have a program in JIGS at its operational level that is the Independent Correctional Center Visitor Program, which are actually our monitors that are stationed at the respective correctional centers that are the eyes and ears of the inspecting judge and that monitors all issues and activities within those areas. They report accordingly. They report on a daily basis on serious issues. They report weekly, monthly, and which is then contained in our quarterly reports and also presented in our annual reports. This program is an effective program that is actually being in this organization since the last 20 years. But what we have observed in this operating section, that this independent correctional center visitors was not aligned to the public service. They were paid as independent contractors. They would invoice JIGS, and we would get payments per invoice for the number of hours worked. We then consulted the Department of Public Administration and got direction from them, and we have now aligned the independent correctional center visitors to a program within JIGS and aligned it to the public service. There are 196 of them currently on our books, and we are on a serious recruitment drive. We have a vacancy rate of about 86 currently, which we are now filling. So when I came on the first instance, there was a huge vacancy gap, but we have now closed these gaps, and we have our presence in almost all centers currently. This program is a very successful program. As I said, we've now aligned this to public service. We are now paying them on 3/8, which means 3 hours out of 8 hours at the center, or 5 hours out of 8 hours, or 6 hours out of 8 hours, as aligned by public service directors in terms of DPSA. Whilst we have this, the core function in our operating model is for the judicial inspector to actually investigate, inspect prison centers and also remand detentions and generate a report. Now, this program has been in existence for the last 20 years in terms of the Act. But what we did now, we re-evaluated this and we reassessed it. And we now aligned it also to an activity to start rating each correctional center. So in future, you will be seeing, and now currently already in our quarterly reports and aligned in our annual report, which is to be presented to this portfolio committee soon, you will find that we rate correctional centers in three categories. Good, means thumbs up. It's good, it's performing. Secondly, it's satisfactory, it meets the norms and the standards of that B orders or the guides of that of DCS. The third one is unsatisfactory, and we spell out the reasons why we rate the center unsatisfactory. So we have now also aligned this area of inspections to what we would call in the new public management of categorizing our assessments. And it makes it much more easier than to present to portfolio on the status of our centers throughout the country. One area which is also tasked to us is also emanating out of these inspections is to conduct investigations, like the most recent one that has occurred in St. Albans on Sunday. This, at our operational level, we have a huge gap in terms of capacity. This is a specialized area, and JIGS have been using its current inspectors to conduct these forms of sophisticated, complex, forensic-style investigations and generate reports. This is one area that we have now built into our new business case to attend to in that business model so that we identify that gap has been closed. So this is one of the areas that we want to enhance on. Maybe a little bit on, you know, there's 243 centers in the country. The average population of inmates currently in our books in the next report that's to be released is approximately 162,000 inmates. JIGS has approximately 41,000 employees. DCS has approximately 41,000 employees and a budget roughly of almost $21.5 billion. Okay, they're the national department. They have a huge task to play, and also to exercise the advantage in terms of the core national function. But in comparison to JIGS, an oversight body that's supposed to oversight the very same department, we have, as mentioned already, 86 employees permanent, 196 ICCV as our monitor station at the centers, which brings our establishment staff just under 400, and a budget of 71 million rand. We are dependent totally on DCS on our IT infrastructure. The judge's email is DCS, including the rest of the entire staff, the very same department that we oversee. This is in our operations strategy. We are totally dependent on them to press a button to effect an appointment in our organization. If I effect an appointment of a person, I'm dependent on them to press the button to effect appointment on PASA. Likewise, logistics, purchasing goods, operating systems like BAS, we are totally dependent on all the infrastructure. This is what currently replacing with our operations. One area which is contained in this document for you is an area that is the information management system. This system has been an online reporting system where DCS, right down to the levels of heads of centers, are required to report on a daily basis of GET, of segregation, of these are all mandatory reporting issues, including use of cost. Sorry, Judge, not minimum cost. It says use of cost. These are not reported because this system doesn't work. Now, these are all our disenabled, Honorable Chair. And this is what we are challenged with on a daily basis. Like the very same one most recently, the St. Albans incident, on Sunday, if we did not request information on Monday morning, we would have not got it matters. We had to prompt a report from them to give us the information in order for us to register this and then execute our mandate in terms of letting one of our inspectors to go down to Port Elizabeth to conduct the investigation. Now, this electronic management system, we are totally reliant on because by the press of the button, we'll be able to tell you how many deaths have occurred, whether it's natural or unnatural. We'll be able to tell you how many people were segregated. Now we cannot, because we don't have the information and they are not compliant. Now, some centers are compliant because we put in what we would call an alternative manual reporting system, where the National Commissioner has obliged and signed off a circular and submitted this right down across the value chain, right to all the heads of centers in order for them to comply on a manual basic system so that they could supply the information to us in order for them to comply with the Act, which is a statutory requirement in terms of the report, on report. May I just add, you will see in our report to come, in this annual report, how that has trickled down to numbers that you would count in your fingers. Now, this is a huge challenge to us because if centers are not reporting this, we would not be able to action and also investigate and account and report to you accordingly. So yes, Jake's is operating within an environment with the bare minimum and it is surviving on an operational level in order for it to report and account on the activities in which it can. You would find from time to time that DCS would say they have 346 deaths on natural, but at a later stage that death of natural death gets converted after an autopsy report is presented, and then that is then converted to either unnatural death. So you would find these deviations occurring from time to time from Jake's reporting versus that to DCS. However, Jake's reporting is based on actual information of as we visit each center, we report accordingly. Now, let's get back to a little bit on the inspections. When I got here at the Judicial Inspectorate, the JIGs for the last MGEF, they were conducting approximately 81 inspections over a cycle of period of 3 years, meaning that they would only visit a center after every 3 years. We have immediately re-engineered this. And we moved people around in the organization in order for us to ensure that, no, at least we should break the back from 33.3% to at least 50% per performance cycle. We are now assessing, Mr. Chair, Honorable Chair, 122 in the last performance cycle, and we hope to envisage in the current sitting cycle of 136 out of 243 centers. Now, this can show you a shift, but we would not be able to do all 243 as we would then compromise the standard and quality of our reporting. That aligns with investigations emanating out of these inspections. We then follow on to the investigation. Critically, JIGS has taken a decision as guided by our honorable and inspecting judge. Every single death's got to be investigated. Period. So we are investigating every single death that occurs in all centers, irrespective of whether it's natural or whether it is suicide or whether it is self-inflicted, etc. We are investigating. We have now synergized our working relationship through the inspecting judge with the office of the NDPP, as is already alluded to. We've also synergized our working relationships and our operational model right down to the DPP's office and engaging them on all issues of investigations, like the one of the Translay matter that occurred in 2016 or 2015. They're now being charged. We've synergized our working relations at the national level with the South African Police Services. And this had come from our previous Honorable Minister, Michael Masuta, who requested that we synergize our working relationship because we should not just be reporting. All these critical investigations should be taken to its max, right to the conclusion, so that we could account to this committee and to the citizens of our country of the outcome of the death of a loved one. Likewise, we've synergized our working relationship with the DPCI judge from the Hawks, and there's a serious matter that we're currently busy with emanating from the KZN region, and the DCI judge is assisting us with that matter. Likewise, we've synergized our working relationship with ICAP, where it involves any of the police officers together with DCS officials. ICAP is on board with us to also assist us. So, yes, with the little that we have in our hands of the 71 million, as you will see, on the previous occasion, we had underspent by 23% when I took over this office. I'm proud to say that we have spent the current budget of the previous budget at 93.3%. The shortfall of 6.3% or 7% is based on current vacancies and some of the ICC repositions that we need to fill. So this is where JIGS has moved from its current position to where it is now, and there's still a lot of room for it to move forward once this business case is presented by the minister to the minister of DPSA to consider the submission of this business case in order for JIGS to be considered as an independent oversight body of DCS. Maybe lastly, I would like to talk a little bit about that our country is part of signatories of international instruments, which I started this document with. The United Nations Convention Against Torture and Other Cruelty to Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment of OPCAT, I think you're well aware, has been ratified in our country in 20 March this year. There was a launch of it most recently in July here in Cape Town. I'm sure some of you have attended it. We also align the Mandela rules to JIGS operations. We test the Mandela rules at our centers. In terms of its deliverables. Judge served as a member on the NPM, the National Preventative Mechanism, which is housed and hosted by the Human Rights Commission, driven by Commissioner Chris Nesson, where Judge is a member, active member, and he plays an active role, and Commissioner Chris Nesson accompanies Judge on numerous occasions on his visits to centers. So, there's still a lot to be done in JIGS. And I'm guided by my inspecting judge and also by this committee to ensure that we act without fear, favor, or prejudice. And we are here to account to this committee on all our activities that is accurate and informative. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I take this opportunity to welcome Honorable Mufuke and Honorable Msuma, who have joined us. If I may just ask Judge, I think the manager presentation, you talked about Honorable Mulaudi. Welcome. We missed you last week. You talked about the term of service. Of practice, which is generally 3 years, that it might not be enough, and there is a suggestion of 5 or 7 non-renewable terms. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I will elaborate on that in a while, but let me state a few other things, but I promise I will come back to that because it is very important at this time. Just firstly, yes, our budget of 71-72 million, according to Mr. D'Souza, I'm not sure if it is entirely correct, but it is 1/3 of the budget of the kitchen of Folsworth Prison. Now, of course, it's not a fair comparison. It is literally comparing apples and pears, not that they get many apples and pears to eat there, but of course people must eat. But it shows you the massive size of the department versus us. However, the good news, no matter how bad some of our facilities are, but one thing I give correctional services credit for is they have very good records of people. It is not the kind of situation that you see on television in some countries, perhaps comparable to South Africa, countries in Latin America, in Africa, where people disappear into a dark hole until the family gets enough money to bribe somebody to get them out. Generally, when you visit our centers, they can tell you exactly how many people they have, where they are, who is in court today, who is in hospital, am I correct, and forward others. The reporting, let me just say one small thing, perhaps. These reforms that the CEO mentioned, of course some of these things lead to some dissatisfaction. For example, the ICCB, the changeover from the previous system to the present one, there are sometimes people who are dissatisfied, and I am actively involved in trying to ensure fairness. But sometimes the general civil service regulations require, for example, certain levels of qualifications for a certain position. And then we find that somebody who has been doing that job for 6 years already, and now when the contract ends, does not qualify. That is a problem we are addressing. I say something about the independence and then the term of office. The independence is a concept that one can talk about a lot. Of course, nobody is completely independent. The Chief Justice's salary must also come from somewhere, and he must pay tax. The courts are the hardest form of independence. JITS is not a Section 9 of the Constitution institution like the Public Protector or the Human Rights Commission. And the Constitution itself does not even mention JITS. The Constitution mentions all the basic rights of inmates, etc. So, an NGO, well, this debate has been going on for a long time, and I mentioned to you previously, one part of the debate is that people are you taken seriously? But an NGO, Sonke Gender Justice, many of you know about this, but forgive me, some don't, launched a constitutional attack on the Correctional Services Act here in the High Court in Cape Town. The argument is that the entire Chapter 9 and 10 are unconstitutional and invalid because JITS is not sufficiently independent. Alternatively, certain specific clauses. Where do they get it? They work from the Correctional Services Act to the Constitution's protection of basic rights and from the Constitution to international law. Now, let me also say to you, many, many countries do not have oversight bodies at all. Many other African countries. Our model is very much based on the British one. It comes from long before my time. We were in London, some of us, we studied it. Mr. D'Souza accompanied them on an inspection, and he came out with the impression that we do a lot better than them, because he detected a tendency to cover up, a tendency by the oversight body to say, let's not write too openly about rats in the cells because it will make our prisoners look bad. Let's rather report the broken toilet or something. When it comes to broken toilet, by the way, we can report very extensively. But anyway, the argument is, therefore, that we are not sufficiently independent. I am, the inspecting judge is respondent number 4, president is 1, minister is 2, national commissioner is 3, and then later they added the public DPSA as well as treasury. This case was heard in the High Court here in Cape Town on the 6th of June. Judgment is reserved. We don't know when the judgment will come out. But from very early on, from 2017, when the presidency's lawyers arranged for all the respondents and lawyers, there was agreement on all levels by everybody that JIC should be more independent. And even I personally do not agree with each and every one of the Sonke arguments. Some arguments I think are weak. But on the general ideal, there was agreement. So a working group was set up that met. Initially, I was involved, and later, Mr. Messer and our team, together with all other role players, including Treasury, etc. And the plan they came up with is this, what we now call the business case. Now, you have a lot of information here, but I'm not going to go to the board in detail. You can come back and ask. The idea is that JICS, at the moment, JICS is what? A program within DCS? At the moment, JICS is a program within DCS. We looked at international oversight bodies. Like I said, many countries don't have any. But some countries, of course, are also not comparable because their legal systems are very different. The French-speaking countries, for example. So it's difficult to compare. But we also looked at other oversight bodies in South Africa, IPED, the military ombuds, all of those. We developed a model, and last year, actually, Deputy Minister Makwetla sort of asked us to stop, and we went into a whole process of public consultation. We sent out invitations to stakeholders, to our own staff, and generally to the public, and we had a seminar in March last year. This year, 8 March this year. So what emerged out of all of that is the so-called business case. The business case is, if you put it all together, a document which is kind of 6 inches thick, but the main part is, of course, a cover document. After looking at various models, the conclusion of this task group is that JICS should be not a program in DCS. We are not, like I said, a Chapter 9 institution, but it should be what is called a government component. These are the terminology used. What would that mean? It would mean, in short, that we are further away from DCS, but, like I said, we have to account to somebody. The judge, by the way, is not an accounting officer. According to the Act, the judge cannot appoint the judges. The CEO appoints, according to the Act. The appointment has to be effected by DCS, and the CEO is accountable to the National Commissioner at the moment for money matters and administration. That's where the perhaps theoretically the tension is with the so-called control of the judge, but the judge does not report on money and cannot appoint. For example, if the judge wants to discipline the CEO, I have to refer it to the National Commissioner. That's how it is at the moment. Now, this business model, this business case, this government component would place us further away from DCS and closer to either Department of Justice or the Department of DPSA. So the CEO will still have to report, but not to the very same body that we oversee. report to the Director General of Justice, for example. We have had instances where, I don't want to boast here about overseas travels because that doesn't, but there was an overseas visit where I was asked to join an international organization and invited to give a paper which the conference was on mentally ill inmates in Portugal, where the chief financial officer of DCS decided that to say no. Because he said our travel budget will be exhausted. Now, of course, that's a very dangerous precedent. We may not worry very much about the judge speaking at an international conference, but if we say we want to drive to Toyandu to investigate a murder, and the CFO says, no, I think you must rather go to Bloemfontein to check the kitchen meal times, you know, that is a dangerous sort of precedent. By the way, a next occasion like this one, we simply bypassed DCS and worked directly with the ministry. And by that money for that conference I still owe privately now, because I paid it on the basis that we were sure that the approval would be given. So we want that kind of distance. We don't want, of course, to be not held to account, but we don't want DCS to be able to say, yeah, like I said, we're not going to give you enough money for petrol to drive all the way to Toyandu. Rather go to Sun City in Johannesburg for the 20th time. And we must also understand, we're not talking about individuals. When I was in the Constitutional Court, even all the cases around President Zuma, Mr. Sheikh and so on, I always said, it is not about this individual. It is about the president or the inspecting judge or the minister 20 years from now, who we don't even know who he's going to be. So this business model will place us closer to now the process. This business case is with the minister. As far as I understand the process, the minister must refer it now to the Minister of Public Service Administration. That minister must convene a so-called assessment committee. Am I correct? And then from there it will go on. That may or may not be the end. For the litigants, that will not be enough. We argued in court that at least it is a step in the right direction. But the main question that we will have to think about, and where you will become very involved, is amendments to the Act, or perhaps a new act. Now, the minimalist approach, the very minimalist one, would be, if this model goes through, to interpret the Act in a way, and according to Treasury and so on, it can be done, but I am skeptical. I don't know how we can interpret that the CEO is accountable for money to the National Commissioner. To say National Commissioner now means Director General of Justice. So the minimalist approach would be to change those laws. But there is a bigger debate about also the powers and functions of JICS and its whole location. When we saw the new deputy minister recently, he said, why don't you start drafting an act? And we have it. It's in my bag here. But it is far from finalized. By the way, when this process started, even the DCS senior official said the trend nowadays is to lift things like this out of the main act and to give it its own act. How long that will take, I don't know. That I don't know. So to sum up, the business case, the model will help us to a large extent, but it may have to be followed with amendments, perhaps minimal, or a new act. If I don't want to talk now about powers and functions, if you want to ask, we can respond to that. Let me conclude, Chair, with your question. The act itself says the president appoints the inspecting judge. tradition has been that the minister recommends to the president. I don't know if that is always how it happened. It seems to me that the tradition was to make the appointment 3 years. But about 2.5 years after my appointment, we discovered that my own appointment never stated the period. It was left out. So, however, I'm actually appointed by minutes from cabinet. And that became irrelevant, though, because in the minister, the previous deputy minister and minister felt quite strongly, especially deputy minister, that there should be some continuity in view of this transition that we are in with regard to the judge. But the minister decided to play it safe and to not impede the new administration, and wrote to the president, which then happened, to make a 6-month appointment not only of the inspecting judge but also other positions. I think on the Correctional Services Council, etc. It was so. My term expires the end of this month, for 6 months. We have in the past, even in our court documents, my recommendation has been, but regardless now my own position, that 3 years is too short on the one hand. On the other hand, for independence, it will be better to make it a non-renewable term. That is a little bit closer to courts. Constitutional Court, South African Constitutional Court, 12 years. German Constitutional Court, 12 years. Of course, United States Supreme Court, you're appointed until you die. And if you are Judge Clarence Thomas, you can sit there for 30 years without saying anything in court ever, from what we hear. But the advantage of the non-renewable term is that one does not have to worry whether you offend the minister, the national commissioner, or whoever, because you know that they cannot fire you. Of course they can. Nobody is above the law. They can, of course, if you act. But they cannot fire you because you write an unpopular report. But also, it does not help, in simple terms, to suck up, because you cannot be reappointed anyway. So we have recommended the public protector, for example, 7 years. We have recommended, I think, 5 years non-renewable. But this is not where we are right now, because I have now been in this for 3 years and 5 months. By the end of September, it will expire. I am personally available. This work, it's taxing. It is emotionally taxing as well. Perhaps I don't know whether you will agree with it, but I have a personal interest in people. So I don't only fill in the forms and check the medicines in the medicine cabinet. I've had long interviews with gang leaders, murderers, to understand what is going on. I interview gangsters who are there for several life terms, uncuffed, in an office. I know that one cannot believe like what they say. You can also, by the way, not believe what the officials tell you. So one makes up your mind. But last week here in Randfleet, I sat for many hours. One guy is an ex-policeman who shot his wife 42 times with his 9mm pistol. He says he is appealing against both the conviction and sentence.
Yeah.
And I said, what's the conviction? He says, no, because there were good reasons for him to do it. And the other one I interviewed is there for several things, but the latest is that he killed a fellow inmate with a garden fork.
Yeah.
However, both of them had complaints. I listened to them. When the one alleged that he was chained and tortured, and he said others know about it, they saw it, and others were also chained and tortured. I said, okay, leave, and I asked the youth, I said, bring the others here now. So we interviewed some of the others. It turned out that it was not true what he said. So, that is where we are at the moment. Ideally, I would suggest something like a 5-year non-renewable term. You know, the civil service is very slow. This business, by the way, something we have not mentioned today, we do not have accommodation. We do not have an office. We, to use the politically incorrect term, we squat from place to place. Initially, Jigs was only based in Cape Town. Now we have 6 regions. When Minister Masuta called me at the time to ask about my availability, he said we are busy moving the head office from Cape Town to Tshwane. So we have a Centurion office in Centurion for the northern region, which is far too small. There are 8 people sitting in a room a quarter of the size of this one. Then the head office, since my appointment, we have been having meeting after meeting after meeting. National Commissioner Mudise, the first time he saw me, he said, "Do you have an office?" I said, "No." He picked up the phone. He said, "I will now arrange." And we still don't have an office. And that is one of the places where there is some breakdown between DCS, Public Works, the whole tender process. We were, for a few months, we were in the Poynton's building in Pretoria. And before the mayor ordered evacuation and whatever happened there, I wrote several letters to the minister to say this place is very dangerous. The elevators get stuck with pregnant women, with 16 people in a small elevator, and so on. So we moved out of there, and at the moment, we are occupying 2 floors in the ministry. Our staff are just below the minister, and I don't know if it's because of my position, but I'm 1 floor above the minister. But we are just borrowing that. We are, again, and we still do not have office accommodation. Now, I don't mention this to blame any particular individual. I also mention it because processes take very, very long. So that's why, as far as the position is concerned, we would recommend a longer term, even 7 years, I don't know, but definitely non-renewable. And as far as the present situation is concerned, I saw the minister for the first time last week. Decisions apparently have not been taken, but we just hope that finality happens soon, because it is also not good for an organization. And that goes back, by the way, I will conclude with that, that some people inside and outside an organization, but especially perhaps some of the people you oversee, enjoy and welcome and exploit a situation of change. I think you may experience it here. I have told very respectfully both Minister and Deputy Minister that they must be careful with information to be received. All of a sudden, when the ministry changed, we experienced a more negative atmosphere. And it did not come from the minister. But it was clear that the information they receive is not always, I'm trying to be very careful with my word, but is not always completely fair and accurate. So we think stability is important. Because of my personal interest and because of the project that we are busy with, I would be available, even if it's not for a full term. But of course, that decision would be in the hands of the ministry, whoever advises them, and ultimately the president. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. If you have questions, input, the time is now. Honorable Hisham, honorable Jende, honorable Ngola, honorable Msuma, honorable Nimbo Drachen, honorable honorable Dennis, honorable Stern, honorable Horn, honorable Swart, honorable Bulawuse, in that order.
Thank you,
Chairperson. Just thank you very much for the input as well as the message, the insightful journey and where Jigs is at this moment in time. Sounds like a journey that many have traveled. Let me perhaps just make a motivation and also ask a question. The term of office, there are three major issues you make in principle or in person. One can actually share with you the frustration when it comes to infrastructure development and public service. I think you pitched it correctly that there's a multiple of role players involved centered around public service, PW, and which requires constant constant massaging and facilitation. And if you leave it alone, it doesn't get any better. And so we hope that you will find permanent office. One is not sure good that you are where you are now. Hopefully that will be resolved. I noticed that you were there. I know you are there. The term of office, you certainly have to look at that. That requires a legislative amendment or rather a correctional service. There's a number of other entities obviously facing the same type of. The tradition has been 3 years, which for good reasons, but development with IT and CM and other progressive processes, especially the interdependency required now, very longer term here. But I'm sure we will discuss that. What I'm more interested in is the whole independence regime of the chicks. Yes, it's not exactly the same as the judiciary, but you have the luxury of the recent last few years development by the OCJ. Exactly the journey they went through, you know, a number of studies, and the principles would almost be the same of being borrowed from there for that matter. I'm talking about administrative auxiliary service processes. For example, when it comes to appointments, as you know, in terms of the procedure, the act there provides precisely they would be in consultation. I mean, the CEO there of the OCJ is appointed ultimately by the Minister in consultation with the Chief Justice, for example. And similarly, as you know, discipline follows. So there is no reason, my own personal view, which was discussed, of course, in the committee, why the CEO should be appointed by a National Commission. That's quite outdated, we acknowledge that. Long outdated, so we have to look at that act itself. Because that, at the end of the research inspecting judge, we know that the CEO of this entity almost did of the structure. In fact, by the way, it should actually be an entity. That's the correct treasury term in terms of the PMFA in which you get registered. If it were to separate actively from a report or an amendment to the entity, would enable the financial management processes to define the culture. It would be subject to orders, like anybody else, and so on. And the more you ask, the more you will have to be responsible. You know that, obviously, in terms of accountability. There are other similar to you who are trying to avoid being an entity because of poor decisions. But I think the principal issue is the way ones who you are asked to monitor independently are the ones that are the ultimate direct decision makers when it comes to governmental such as discipline, such as appointment, that's clearly a conflict of interest. That's what it seems what you've presented so far.
same with OWN in terms of the procurement process. I thought that's a long time resolved because you account for your own ring pin allocation. And business processes when it comes to rural, like we had a few years ago with the magistrate, where the department, the transition, we are at the MOU with the OCJ, that any requisition for magistrates who attend conferences or what we call training sessions would come from the fund directly, and they would just report to them to the Director General quarterly or annually to comply with the payment made. I'm not sure why in the interim we're not pursuing that. I'll be very surprised if the National Commission wouldn't agree to that. If not, then obviously we will have to try to assist in that regard. Well, there's a model to that effect. We just went through that 4 years ago. And it's working nicely until the Act and the effect of the lower court is sure the effect of the measure is not there yet. And it's still impacting in practice right now, that model. So something agreed between the OCJ and the Justice Commission. So if you have a look at that, I'm just responding to some of the immediate frustrations you pointed out that I think is there for the taking. I wasn't sure why you say the working group also did some bumping and consultation, because normally that would be related to legislative process rather than my own advice would be that it's only time on that at this stage until you have legislation intention. And then lastly, there is, of course, other models such as IGA that you can network with. But I think your nearest is LCJ, and it's very fresh, recent. Some of it is still in transition to the local court. You can borrow from there for now. Thank you, Chair. We will be taking another presentation of overcrowding like this, so I'm not going to go into some details. Thank you.
Thank you, Chen. I appreciate the presentation by both the judge and the CEO. Very informative. I think it's a very helpful also to some of us here in the committee. Let me start the chapter with the comment or the report in terms of the runaway reporting and what was the in terms of the typical data with the judge and the national commission. I heard the judge explaining, giving us some explanation in terms of the, but I just want to hear if there any suggestion in terms of wanting to bring that in fact in one line or making it for future. I'm talking about the future as we try to perfect in this habit. Chicks. And then secondly, there is from the judge, I wanted to find out because the community outside there sometimes they have a feeling that travel is like a hotel for these inmates. They enjoy, you know, better life than the community themselves. So my question would be, how can we balance that so that the community also feel that they are safe and comfortable when you do your inspection? And then also you mentioned the issue of the private, in terms of overcrowding. Those private institutions, there's overcrowding, and now we have overcrowding. Can we get what makes them not to be overcrowded also, like with overcrowding? I also have a question. There's somewhere where the judge mentioned that there is equipment within the facility, new equipment that are not used. Is it because maybe
the management is not making use of that element of training our officials to be able to use that. And what is the use of buying equipment that are not used? Because I'll tell you what, I know sometimes the officials will normally do this when they want to push the issue of budget towards the end of the term, when they want to give a picture of saying they have there's no underspending of the use of their budget to the limit. So can I just maybe hear your recommendation in terms of that and try to help the situation. And then also, a chairperson, on the issue of the visitor program, because I saw when I was reading the report that there is a reduction of in terms of the budget that is used for consultants, which is very good to comment. And it's because of maybe this progress, because initially I heard the CEO saying he would use consultants in order to do similar work like this. On the part of the very same visitors, the CEO says you place them in a center for 3 hours or 5 hours. Is it enough for them to be there, to be able to see or get the picture of what is happening within that center? And then also, what do you do with them? Because in I know that there are a few of them. What do you do in the case that they have overstayed their work or them having been in that center? And you find that, because I know with such problems, you find that in future they get used to the situation, the place, they begin to become comfortable, and then they normally end up not doing their job properly. But have you also looked into that one? Lastly, based on the information system, this one of if why do we, I know that information system assists us to maybe to put that information that is will be collected, and then so that you can be everybody go to the system and get that information. But now when we have that, is it that information system, is it going to be working in line with this problem? I don't know. How do you bring them together? And because I should think that the digital problems are there for collecting information. Is it maybe, I don't know, can you just give more clarity on that one? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Honorable Moderator.
Thank you, very
much, Chairperson. I appreciate the report presented before us at the committee. Unfortunately, they found us in a very bad mood and in a very heavy heart due to the lawlessness that is taking over the country. Just in a report, Chair, I'm sitting here of a four-year-old girl that has been murdered and raped in Bloemfontein. On top of what has been happening in the past 5 days. So we are going to forgive us. We are in a bad mood. Chairperson, we grew up in a society where you had people who were ex-convicts, whom were referred to as AMA 26, AMA 28, whom were highly respected by our societies. We only knew well why when we grew up that that actually is a signal of an institutionalized gangsterism within our correctional system. It has been persistent, Chair. It has been institutionalized across the country in almost all. It looks like a certain syndicate network. But we don't seem to be making a progress in terms of affecting that kind of behavior or conduct within our correctional services. What are the issues relating to that, that which are hammering our progress in terms of eliminating such tendencies within our correctional services? You have made mention of a mechanism that you have established of ensuring that you have got a fast responsibility execution, which is in the form of independent correctional center visitors. I just want to check that are they the only reporting mechanism from our correctional centers on the ground? Can just a member of the public report any wrongdoing that they see happening within our center? You have equally made mention of some rigid tendencies within the TCS officials, which actually make your job not too much easy. I just want to check that with the independent correctional center visitors, don't we have similar incidents where they are not allowed to access to centers, where they are not allowed access to information and all relative issues relating to that? In the powers and functions, Chair, it is said that part of your responsibility is to report corrupt and dishonest practices. I think it is public information that we have had a long-serving Bosasa scout within the department. Have you been able to pick the Bosasa issue in time? If that is in the affirmative, what then? What mechanisms did you then take in ensuring that government acts quickly against what we can term a corrupt and dishonest practice? I think some of the issues reside with the department itself, which I think this meeting is advantageous for us. We are soon having a quarterly report meeting with the department, which we are going to maybe as a committee help raise some of the matters which are hindering your progress. Lastly, you investigate, you make a report. What then in the ordinary practice, what then happens after having found a wrongdoing, whether by a correctional service official or whoever person who was involved in any wrongdoing as it regards to your modus operandi? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've been largely covered by colleagues who spoke before me. I only need to emphasize two things. But firstly, let me thank the Judicial Inspectorate for the report. It paints a very clear picture of the situation in the correctional services unfortunately, it's a very grim picture. As I said, Honorable Chair, I'll just emphasize two things, two concerns. My concern is whether are we winning the war against criminality in this country. I'm very concerned to learn today that about 70 of our centers are up to 150% overcrowded. Definitely we need to build more centers, but does that mean the increase of criminality or the reduction of criminality? I'm grateful that we've been given statistics or reviews of what happens in other countries in the world. I would be interested to know how do we compare with these countries. I thought the move from penalizing approach to rehabilitation approach was going to have positive spin-offs for the country. However, the report is saying that there is an increase, or I feel that there is an increase of offenses by offenders, like all assaults against one another. We are told that there are about 988 reports of wrongful conduct by the inmates. This happens when they are being rehabilitated. So how can we make rehabilitation more effective? Also, within the centers, there are perhaps unacceptably high rates of re-offending. So, how successful is our rehabilitation? For instance, how do we compare now that we are focusing on rehabilitation to the time that we were focusing merely on punishment? So these are the concerns that I'm having. I'm fully aware after the report of the shortcomings in the organizational state of the department. But somehow I feel that the people who come to you to rehabilitate are the people perhaps who should be treated elsewhere, because it seems you are treating the symptoms, but there are fundamental and original causes that lead to these people committing crimes and coming to you. Maybe that's where we lose the battle. As I said, Chair, these are just two concerns that I would like to emphasize.
Honorable members, I think I just want to remind members that we are dealing with the operating model. We are not dealing with general duties, but we are focusing on the operating model. Honorable Steve.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Jex, for the presentation. I would just like to add to what my honourable colleague said relating to the mood in the country linked to what has been happening in these past few days. It's very concerning and worrying for me as a woman and as a mother of a girl child about the mood that is currently happening, because right now my daughter is writing matric with the emotional state, and how many of her friends also have to focus on their matric, but they can't because they're wondering if they're safe. And then the Honourable Judge said, you know, you sit with the prisoners, a prisoner who shot his wife 42 times, and that prisoner tells you, I had a reason to do it. If every perpetrator said, I had a reason to harm a woman and a child, I'm really, really worried. So I just want us to keep that in mind. I want to go back to what the CEO said about the Independent Organizational Center Visitors, Correctional Services Visitors, the programs. I'm still not clear on that. What are the programs that you're doing there? What is in the program? And then plus, after what you spoke about the relationship between DCS and JICS, you said the ITCV is on independent contractors. What is the relationship with the independent contractor and the Department of Correctional Services and the officials? What is the relation between the two? Because it must be difficult for them to come into the prison. They are independent and they are expected to be the eyes and the ears of the judge. So what is the relationship between those two? Then you also said you're operating in 5 provinces only. So now I'm new in this committee, so I'm curious, why only 5? What about the other 4 provinces? How do you cover them as JICS? How do you cover the other 4 provinces? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Judge, are you prepared to share your proposed draft bill with us, delegates? And did you have a look at the iPad Act through the document? Have many, many problems, that's quite clear. What can this committee do to assist? But it's a list of traffic or things, not necessary items. And then my personal birthday is St. Albans. It's an absolute disgrace. It's something that all of us should be deeply ashamed of. It's a human rights violation of the city system. And if you could say something that we could do about that.
Yes, the judge was talking about the issues relating to independence. The issue of the hawks, when we were developing the legislation around the hawks and the decision of the Constitutional Court, kept on ringing in my mind that we might find ourselves there in terms of operational independence.
Okay, Honorable Staff? Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the judge and CEO. I want to start where the judge started. He was talking about the optional protocol and the fact that he's part of the National Preventative Mechanism and that he operates really closely with the Human Rights Commission and Commissioner Nissen in particular. And my question follows on from that of my colleague, Clarence Bodenbach. There are conditions, I have no doubt, in many correctional services that constitute human rights abuse, and they may even constitute torture. And I mean, it's all very well for us to have signed the protocol and launched the protocol and committed ourselves to a protocol, and then we sit day in and day out with conditions that amount to cruelty and torture. And I don't know whether, I'm sure you do, because I get these horrific pictures and these horrific videos, normally at about sort of 2 o'clock in the morning from inmates, about what goes on inside, and about, you know, medical conditions and operations that have been botched and things like this. I mean, what goes on inside the prisons is not consistent with human dignity remotely, in many of them anyway. And specifically, I mean, Section 7 of the Correctional Services Act, Section 7.1 says, inmates must be held in cells which meet the requirements prescribed by regulations in respect of floor space, cubic capacity, lighting, ventilation, sanitary installations, and general health condition. I tell you, without a shadow of a doubt, that probably half the prisons in South Africa don't conform with 7.1. So I don't know what needs to be done about that. Then, if I can just turn quickly to the government component, governing component. On slide 14, it says the GC will resolve some of the governance and organisational challenges that JICS currently faces. I'd be very keen to know what it doesn't address and why we're setting for, if you like, half solution to the problem. We're going to review this thing. Let's do a proper job. Let's do it holistically. And then one of the many casualties of not having a separate portfolio committee on correctional services for the last while was that we used to get the quarterly reports of the JICS as well. They used to be presented to the committee, and then one could sit both with DCS and with JICS and say, this was reported to the DCS, what's happened to this particular problem? And it was a very, very good accountability measure, and I think it helped the JICS, and it certainly kept the DCS on their toes, because if a matter was then reported and JICS had asked for feedback and feedback wasn't coming, then we were able to help unravel that. So if the quarterly report of JICS can't come to the committee because of time pressures, we now have the subcommittee, and I would strongly suggest, Chairperson, that those go to either this committee or the subcommittee so that we can properly interrogate them. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Thank you, Chair. The issue I want to raise is also in respect of the independent correctional center visitors. Firstly, I want to say that unfortunately when visiting centers, one of the standard things I ask of inmates is, are you aware of the ICCV allocated to your center? Unfortunately, the large majority indicate that they're not aware of this functionary being allocated to the center. So that, and then I've also at centers looked around, and it would seem there's not much by way of let's say placards or whatever. Let's say inviting complaints, and obviously inviting complaints at a correctional center in itself also holds dangers. But what I really want to ask is, how do JICS go about to present the ICCVs at these centers? And in addition to that, if one looks at the Act, it says that the ICCV is supposed to deal with complaints, but if the bulk of inmates are not aware of these ICCVs functioning there, how will they get to complaints? And then secondly, if you allow me, Chair, also the visitors committee that is supposed to be, let's say, the next level then of dealing with unresolved complaints, if we could just be appraised also as to whether that is functioning and how well throughout the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I won't be here for the responses, but I do appreciate the input, and thank you for the good work that the inspectorate does under very, very difficult conditions. And I want to just also align myself with my colleagues who are just expressing great concerns about increasing lawlessness in the last few days, and myself in particular last night when I woke up to gunshots and explosions next to the N2 where I live quite close by, where there was heists last night. So this is a daily lived experience that we all have. And so whilst we're not discussing broadly, but one does raise the issue of the efficacy of rehabilitation and levels of recidivism, and that, whilst that's not a central ambit of what you look into, but clearly there does seem to be an increase in lawlessness, and which is of great concern to all of us and needs to be expressed. Getting straight down to the business model, I think, Chair, we've been discussing this model for a long time, and my colleague raised the model of IPID, and that's something I raised some years ago, I think 5 years ago or something, to look at that, and I think that is useful. But, Chair, maybe we can assist IPID practically. You've already indicated there is a model, we need to look at that, but the process is lined with the executive. You said the Minister of Correctional Services is looking at it, he's passed it on to the Minister of Public Service, and they're looking at it. Chair, we need to bring them here and ask them, what is the progress, how long is it going to take, timeline. Otherwise, it's going to be an extended process yet again. New administration, and this matter is not new. This is a matter we've been discussing for some time, years almost, and we've got to make progress. I fully support, Judge, your request for the lengthy period of tenure of the inspecting judge. I think the problem comes with new administrations, new judges coming in. And I want to thank you, Judge, for the raising the bar and your staff at the inspectorate. So from my side, I think we need to exercise oversight from our side and try to make sure that this process of the model is expedited as quickly as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Most of my questions are covered by colleagues, but we highly sympathize with your judge. When I was trying to check on the presentation about the business case, right, page 5, about the staff complement, I tried to do my own calculations, which I see that is totally unfair, the situation we are working through. Because you said you have 86 staff members, including the CEO. So I just check on myself that let's say the people who are operative, there are 18 members, officials. And compared, if you divide them by 243 prisons or facilities, it takes that to one officer is responsible for 3 facilities with a lot of inmates. And as also again, if you can try to divide out of the 164,000 inmates, it means one official is monitoring 2,050 inmates, which is highly impossible. It's with a budget of 71 million versus 21 billion for the people we are monitoring, which is very much unfair. Also, the other thing which I wanted to comment is on the slide four of the presentation, the big presentation. When I see your offices here, I see the offices, I understand because of the budget you are receiving. It was the only office which is dealing with the old Transvaal, which is Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest. It's only in the children with 8 people, which is highly, I don't know how can they do justice to this institution of the 4 provinces, which is Valley, including Gauteng by 8 staff members. That's what I'm trying to sympathize with you. So the other comment I wanted to put is about the statement. You said you have the draft legislation in your bags. So with this anomaly, why do you keep that amendment of legislation to yourself? We are here when the legislature will have to, we are here to make laws.
So can't we put this thing on table so that we can start the road, the ball rolling for changing this statute, which is unworkable. The other thing you talk about, the IMS, like Information Management System, which you said it was not working for a long time. The question is, don't we have a remedial action for this? Like the other honorable member said, so what happens if you find something is not according? Like this, the government purchased the system is not working. What are the remedial actions that will be taken against the accounting officer of the department? You said you are working with IPED in terms of reporting the cases. I wanted to know about how many criminal cases open against the officials in the department. Although maybe you have been assisted by IPED, if you can have the statistic of that. You also talk about the overseas trip which you paid yourself when you are going there for the presentation about the mental illness. So I wanted to know, what are the procedures of you embarking on the trips, or what official trips? Do you pay for yourself as a claim after all? There is a process, or there is no supply chain management to do the said thing. So again, I want to know about JIPS. Do you have a call center where if some members of public or anybody who can see something wrong, who can report to you? Because I can see in terms of the staff establishment, there are very few you can cover. You will be always, we will see you as a failure while it's us, the government is failing you. So do you have a call center where maybe people they can report? The other member said even the official, the inmates, they must be aware that there is this called JIPS which can assist any member of public to report what is happening to our prison. Lastly, it's about the research made by the contact advisor. About the 2017-2018, your annual report shows that there were 3 grievances reported. 2 were resolved. Then we would like to know out of the that what is the nature of the unresolved grievance, and when or whether this has been resolved correctly. If not, what are the reasons of that unresolved grievance, the one which was not resolved? Lastly, Chairperson, is about the budget of 2017-18, which they underspend by 18 million. So I wanted to know that when you underspend, are you not exposing yourself to Treasury and the department that, no, these people, they don't want to use money. That's why they're always underspending. Why don't you spend this budget as you requested it? How can you unspend 18 million when you are crying that you are underfunded, when you are underspending? So, all what I can. Oh, the last thing is about the Section 88A of the DCA of appointing the CEO by the department, National Commissioner, which is very much unfair. There is a conflict of interest here, Chairperson. Even in the soccer game, you can't appoint a referee to ref you. You see, so if the National Commissioner will appoint the CEO, who must also again oversight him, there's a conflict of interest there. So how best can we do to amend this Section 88A of the Correctional Service Act? Thank you very much, Chair.
I think the last part of your question is directed and passed much to the judge.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much, Chair, for all the questions. I will pass some on to my colleagues, but let me start with the very serious question that goes outside our topic of today, but that must be addressed, and that is the philosophical moral underpinnings of all of this. society with a lot of crime that upsets all of us. You know, statistics say, and I find it hard to believe, but I even quoted it in a constitutional court judgment that I wrote. Statistics say there are more than 52 or something like that murders per day in South Africa. And the statistics have shown that a number of times. Of course, in a judgment, I can't make that a judgment. It was quoted in a footnote as background. But that is terrible. The mentioned the term institutionalized gangsterism is a very good term, and it is absolutely correct. We know that these gangs function inside and outside prison. We know that sometimes officials are gang members, or at least close associates. And we know that in the Western Cape, the number of gangs were always the main problem inside, and then they were sometimes linked to other gangs outside, and I've mentioned gangs in other parts. But even that, Chair, is not as clear as it used to be. To some extent, ironically and cynically, the gang system even helped officials, because if there was trouble brooding, and you go to a retired general who is now a pastor while serving his life sentence, and you say, can you help? Reverend Chris Nissen can also tell these stories. This gang general will say, oh, I've not been in the gang for many years, but I'll see what I can do for you. And then the system, then the problem might be resolved. That is also not so easy now. The traditional gangs are infiltrated by others. There are splits within the gangs, depending on the regions, the areas which they come from. There are foreign nationals increasingly fighting for the turf. So all of that is very serious. Now this brings us to the question, how do we balance the war against crime with the demands of the Constitution? My answer is very simple, but perhaps a bit theoretical. Obviously, criminals must be put behind bars. I think one day, 1,000 years from now, we may realize that this is a very primitive solution. But so far, humankind has not been able to come up with anything better. Because after all, we do have to protect society. The serial killers cannot walk around, etc. So receiving a prison sentence obviously means that some of your rights are severely curtailed. The most obvious one is your freedom of movement. Obviously, you are locked up. You cannot say, I have the right to go for a holiday in the Kruger National Park or something like that. However, other rights cannot be curtailed. There were court judgments even in the days of apartheid. For example, by former Constitutional Court Judge Didcot, which says your rights, it depends what your starting point is. Are you saying when you're in prison, you have only those rights explicitly given to you? Or do you have all the rights except those explicitly taken away? And our Constitution clearly demands the second approach. Of course, many of your rights must be taken away, but not your right to life, not your right to food, not your right to decent medicine. So when I speak to somebody who shot his wife 42 times, I told that in a way here as an ironic dark humor. That has nothing to do with us in the first place. He says he's appealing. But that was an indication to me of the mental state of this guy, who also has 100 complaints about torture, which then turned out to be not true when I called his so-called witnesses. So, while one is in prison, you have to be controlled. The Goedemoed example, I don't know how much I must say about that, because the National Commissioner and I have some level of confidence there. But you remember this incident where one prison female warden was stabbed to death with scissors and another one was raped.
That man who did it was serving a life sentence, at least one, for murder and rape. And the year before, he again assaulted somebody in prison. Now, how it happened that he got a medium instead of maximum classification and assigned to clean offices where female officials were working is one of the things we're trying to find out. What happened on that day is he was cleaning the office. He created a diversion in the cells. The men ran there. He locked himself. He was prepared for this. He had a lock with him and all of that. He locked himself in an office. Behind the office was a passage with other officers. He picked up the hammer that they use to test locks. That happened to be there. I don't know where they normally keep it. He hit the female official on the head, and he picked up broken scissors that also happened to be there. And he stabbed her to death right there and then in her neck. Deputy Minister and I, previous Deputy Minister and I were there together. We stood there on the blood puddles on the floor, etc. She was dead immediately. They asked him, why did you do this, when he put desks and stuff to barricade the place. He had the other official with the scissors on her neck. But when they asked him, why did you do it, he said, because she violated my dignity. Then they said, what do you want to come out? He said, I want the assurance that you will not torture me. That thing went on for several hours. They called a police hostage negotiator, a colonel from Aliwal North. At some point during the negotiation, they kept him busy by giving him cigarettes and so on. At some point during this incident, believe it or not, he was allowed to go and pray for a few minutes. So he went into the passage and the other office with his hostage, with the scissors on her throat. And during his prayer time, he raped her. Now, I cannot tell you, I'm a bit hesitant. I know we must report to you, and I promise you we will do. But this one is a sensitive one, and I'm not sure if there's media here, so we will report. But the initial impression, our ICCD, by the way, told me in the car outside the prison that this woman who was killed had a history of humiliating inmates, and that the head of center told our ICCD about it, that something bad may be happening. I said, this is not the time to say this. Everybody expressed condolences with the official. We did twice in statements. I said, our persons, our people, Muslim is here. It turned out quite different. There was an element of humiliation. There are also strong possibilities that there were other things behind it, including collaboration from officials, that it had to do with a syndicate kind of situation. But now, to make it more interesting and more South African, the latest statement Mr. D'Souza's people obtained from this inmate admits that he was promised money to do it, but also has all kinds of allegations about love relationships and witchcraft and all of it in it. We will talk about that later, but back now to our task is, of course these people must be in prison. I don't sit and ask him, explain to me, I now understand why you shot your wife 42 times. I have to investigate if he's tortured or not, because they cannot torture him. They cannot chain him to his bed for days like he alleged they did, and apparently they didn't. So the distinction is simply to protect the public, and for many reasons, these guys have to be locked up. Once they are there, we have to make sure that their inalienable rights, like to life, etc., are not violated. Torture cannot be in any way condoned or approved. Mr. Trump does it when he says that waterboarding, etc., can sometimes be okay, this is not the way we think in South Africa. By the way, sorry, I'm wasting your time now, but allow me a minute. I was in the Angola prison, which is a very large prison in Louisiana. I was in the death row, and I was in the death chamber where they execute people. In that particular one, they have not done it for a while. Texas, next door, they do it on a monthly basis. And I was told that when they saw that the drugs, the medication, the poison was going to expire, they sped up the executions. I was very proud that I'm South African and we do not have that. When I saw that room, how they chain, how they strap somebody to the bed, the whole way in which it occurs, I went down on the detail. The fact that there is a nice dining hall next to it where the person can have a last meal with his or her family. And what especially struck me is when we walked into death row, there were approximately 70 people waiting to be executed. Some of them had been there for 20 years. There's a board with little passport-sized photographs. When we walked in, the warden looked up, and he took up one of the pictures, and he said, oh, I forgot, Uncle Ben is not here anymore. So I got cold, and I said, what happened to Uncle Ben? I thought he was in the room. He said, no, Uncle Ben, after 20 years, he went home this morning, because he's not guilty. The so-called Innocence Project there have proven many cases where people, based on later DNA evidence, were innocent from the beginning. That they were not even, I knew somebody, he was in prison for 27 years, like Nelson Mandela, for a murder he did not commit. He's now doing work, etc., in this area. The reason for that, by the way, is their justice system, I think, where judges and prosecutors are elected. Now, if you need to win an election in your town, you say, for the war against crime, I have the biggest conviction rate. And Mrs. Breitenbach and others will know, even in apartheid days, I saw how a prosecutor would give a file to the defense if there is something in it which discredits the state case or which shows that the state witness contradicts himself. They don't do it. There was a program last night on television on the guy who was in prison for 26 years based on this, on evidence that the police had, which was... So the point I'm trying to make is to fight against crime, it doesn't help to put the wrong people in jail. Not only is it a huge violation of their rights, but the harsh reality is the real guys are still out there. They continue to rape and murder. And secondly, when they are in prison, we have to make sure about their rights minimum. The South African harsh reality is that, of course, because of our poverty, and this is terrible to say, some have a better life inside prison than outside. We have situations, women, I interviewed one, it was later on Carte Blanche, who went out on parole, simple crime like theft. She deliberately committed another crime to get back. Her grandmother said to Carte Blanche, she was so happy when they fetched her because she was coming home. This situation of babies in prison, I don't know whether you have seen that. Babies are in, I saw them last week at Brunswick. Mothers give birth in prison. The babies stay there for 2 years. Depending where that person comes from, and some of them come from illegal, informal settlement, the babies get better food and medicine than they would ever get outside, but it is still prison. And therefore, the psychologists say after 2 years, the first 2 years, the food, etc., is very important, but after 2 years, socialization becomes more important. By the way, they go out of their way, and that I give credit to these kids, to expose those babies to different influences. For example, many of them never see men. Many of them never see a person of a different color. So they have programs now to make them run and play outside so that they can fall and get hurt and climb up a tree and fall down, etc. So the High South African reality is, it's not an hotel, that I can assure you, it is not an hotel. But given the level of poverty that we have, some people actually have a better life inside. In Caledon Prison, people told me, they joked about it, they said it's a rehab center where they come every now and then to stay for a few weeks to get rid of the tick addiction. But the bottom line is, we have to fight crime, but we also have to make sure that people are treated properly. On the independence, the Office of the Chief Justice, that's a whole separate department. And Mr. Misser has extensive experience of that. One must be careful, I think one of the honorable members said, that you're not made independent as a case of death because they cut your budget so much that you cannot function anyway. At least now I can fight for 3 years with the National Commissioner to get a new laptop. But if the National Commissioner says, nothing to do with me, then it's our problem. The ring fencing. Yeah, we are always told that our budget is ring-fenced, but then DCS tells us how we must absorb a budget cut. The budget cut of 2-3 years ago, of 2.5% or something, we were fully prepared to absorb. Firstly, they cut our budget by much more than 20%. Then they said it was a mistake. Then we said, okay, we'll take the 2.5% cut. Then they said, yes, but it must come from your operational budget, not from your, what's the other one?
Compensation.
Not from compensation. Now, if we would say, what we can do without a few secretaries, they say, no, this must come from the petrol for your cars to visit prisons. That is literally what happened there. And there I must say that previous minister helped us a lot by literally cross-examining the CFO of DCS. And catching him out on several points. The reporting line, somebody mentioned Section 88, that's a very good example, Honorable Malawinsi. It starts by saying the inspecting judge must identify a suitably qualified person as chief executive officer, and then it says in 2, the person must be appointed by the national commissioner. This is one of the points in the litigation. Personally, I don't think that's a very strong point, because the judge identifies, the national commissioner of the axis must appoint. Now, in court they said yes, but the national commissioner must appoint. The national commissioner can delay, but for that matter, he can delay anything else also. However, the problem is in that same section, because it then says the CEO is responsible for all administrative, financial, clerical functions, etc. Then it says, he's accountable to the national commissioner, and then says, under the control of the authority of the inspecting judge. Now, theoretically, fortunately, this has not happened. And of course, the inspecting judge cannot give illegal orders. But if the national commissioner says to the CEO, what happened here? And he says, no, the inspecting judge controlled this part. He told me not to tell you this, or something like that. So that is something where we have to seriously look at. Your question, why do we have a draft bill and not share it with you? The reason, quite frankly, why we cannot share it today is because I have not read it myself. It was given to me a few days ago and I have to edit it. But we will certainly come back to you with it as a draft, as something to argue around. And we will do that very, very soon. There were lots of other initiatives before as to who was going to do the drafting and all of that. The ICCBs, Mr. Mitter and others will report on, but the question about how are they identified, Chair, this is one of the things where we lifted our image, because we did have the problem that inmates or offenders do not know the difference between our ICCBs and correctional service officials. Because our limited budget, we could not give them golf shirts. We gave them vests. They all have bright blue vests with the big logo on it. They are clearly identifiable. The bigger question, though, is this ICCB listens to a serious complaint today, and 3 months later, the inmate and the inmate's family said, so what happened to this complaint? Nothing has happened. That is part of our problem. But Mr. D'Souza, Ms. Mchali and others can tell you the process. But we do have that problem. By the way, at the recent conference, a DCS senior official said, oh, but you must train your ICCVs better because they report irrelevant things. They report that not only that they need glasses, they report that the inmate says he wants sunglasses. Now, the rules are quite clear. Obviously, you cannot insist that I want Ray-Ban sunglasses. But if a doctor says you need sunglasses, then you need sunglasses. And when the ICCVs must take every complaint. They cannot sit there and say, no, this one doesn't sound serious enough to me. We have to filter it in our reports. But when we wrote to that DCS official to say exactly where in our reports do we talk about the sunglasses, she said, no, it's not there. Although she said it in public at a conference where the deputy minister was president, etc. Okay, simply on overcrowding, please let us know when are you discussing that, because the report that we recently issued by way of a media statement we would like to make available to you. On the overcrowding, I can simply say there's a lot of anecdotal evidence as to why. Bail, for example. Look, the overcrowding problem starts when the police arrest somebody, and it ends with parole at the end. But bail, for example, the magistrates are now, depending on part of the country, they have their own conferences to set guidelines. Magistrates cannot just let anybody out on bail. The magistrate needs a lot of information from the prosecutors, from the police. The guy may be here for theft, but there is something else pending, which is murder and rape. Then people don't pay the bail. We hear different stories as to why not. They don't have the money. Their family do not want to bring them the money because the family want this person to stay there. Then, of course, the courts must, I feel very strongly, at the recent conference about sentencing internationally, our learned friends from Germany said, oh, the courts must give short sentences. The representative from Nigeria, whom I had never met before, and I both spontaneously said, please not short sentences. If it is only a short sentence, then consider an alternative like correctional supervision. Because Mr. D'Souza and others would tell you people are sentenced to periods like 7 days and so on, 6 months. All that goes back to our institutionalized gangsterism. All that happens, or the main thing that could happen, let me not generalize, is that you become a gang member. You get a 28 to 2. That means you never very not find a job outside. Because employers will say you're a gangster. That means your future is in the gang. So there are many paroles. We hear that in some rural communities, the village head does not want to allow the mother to take back her son after serving 18 years because the head of the village says, I don't want criminals in my village. So more overcrowding. We did a survey only on a small sample, and that we will make available to you. But this brings us back again. Of course, we must understand that the community feel that way. But it's not going to reduce crime if we torture inmates or if we send the wrong people to prison. That is not going to reduce crime. There is a much larger strategy needed in which JITS can play only a very small role, but my analysis is that, on a purely personal level, that poverty is at the basis of many things. Of course, you get serial killers in all society, even in the most advanced ones. Torture, St. Albans. Yes, I am on that mechanism. For some reason, I was actually trying to call Reverend Nissen, the Human Rights Commissioner, before I came here, but there's something wrong with our telephone connection. He has accompanied me. I'm on the National Preventative Mechanism. The torture can happen anywhere. By the way, our whole relationship with IPED is responsible for the police. We are responsible for correctional services. When the person is transported, it happens sometimes that the police and he arrives at the other side beaten up. it happens sometimes that the police and the correctional services blame each other. So that is why we do need to work with IPED, for example. Access, yes, perhaps some of you were present, but our ICCBs was once last year denied access in KZN. Mr. D'Souza knows the full details. I mentioned it somewhere here in Parliament, and when we reported to the Joint Committee, I can't remember which one, one of the members said, oh, you said something, Judge, about access. Have you been denied access? The chair passed the question on to DCS. The DCS, not the national commissioner, passed it on to another senior DCS official, Mr. Smallberger. Mr. Smallberger said, that is, it can't happen. If you deny denied access, report it immediately to the regional commissioner. The regional commissioner was sitting opposite me with his eyes closed. He is the one who denied us the access. When I later mentioned this to Mr. Smallberger, he said, oh, his answer was a policy response. Now, with respect to Chair, that is, I remember, many of you are not old enough, but I remember the PW Buerta Apartheid days. If you say it's allowed that Ahmed Timo fell out of the building and was pushed and died, the response is our policy says you may not push people out of the building and then, so that they die, and therefore it did not happen. So that's the one on the axis. Corruption, yes, the axis, corrupt and dishonest practices. So far, with respect, Chair, we have been limited to the small corruption things, the cell phones and so on. We do not have the capacity at this stage to figure out big levels of tender fraud. It is alleged that it happens, fences, etc. Now, in the previous time I was right here when Mr. I don't know who chaired it then, we mentioned the possibility of public hearings. The Act gives the inspecting judge the power to have public hearings like a commission and to try to figure this out, and perhaps we will still do that. But also, again, that is a question of capacity. You see in the newspapers, and maybe you know it, how much these commissions cost and so on, and we don't have 300 million or whatever. So the corruption so far, but I can tell you that it's quite serious. I don't know whom of you have met Mr. Kretscher, who is in your book. I had an interview with Mr. Kretscher. He's a very charming, intelligent person. You ask about the private, well, why are not they not overcrowded? They are not overcrowded because it's a contract with the government and they only allow the limited number that they can accommodate. Mr. Kretscher was for a few days, for a short while, he was in the Mangaung private correctional center near Bloemfontein, and he asked to be transferred, and by his own admission he said that was the first time in his life that he was for more than 3 days without a cell phone. When you visit Jacob where he is held, he has about 300 complaints. He wants Skype to talk to his 17 lawyers internationally and so on. But there is a cage around the area where he is kept with a mesh. The mesh is designed or the small hole so that one cannot even drop a SIM card through it. While we are walking around, part of the mesh is bent open because members of the emergency support team set the floor above him through the night. Now, who knows? The SIM card, etc. And it has become, around Mr. Kretscher, it is a joke. Firstly, the head of center, then the area commissioner, who was brought here specifically to take care of Mr. Kretscher. So he said, oh, Kretscher tried to bribe him with a Ferrari. So when I interviewed Kretscher, I said to Kretscher, I hear they use many cars and helicopters and machine guns to transport you. And he said, yes, like Trump, a lot of cars and so on. So I said, why do they do it? He said, I have no idea. And when I asked him, do you still have money? He said, no. So the head of center intervened and he said, he promised me a Ferrari. Kretschia said, no, 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 I don't promise you Ferrari. I don't like Ferrari. I promise you Lamborghini. Now, I said to the head of safety, you cannot charge him if you start the joke. But that is how it sometimes happens. It starts, if I sit there and he promises me a Ferrari, and I said, no, no, I don't have a Ferrari. But one day, maybe I say, you know, I need to pay my child's school fees. Can you help? So a lot of that does happen. We have limited capacity to investigate all of that. Mr. D'Souza will, and we'll talk about what happens to reports. I've already said how we compare with other countries. We're in the middle. We are not Norway or the Netherlands by far. We are also not, forget South America and Africa, but pictures I've seen of centers in Poland and Russia, I've not been there. Very, very bad. Picture of a women center in Russia, it looks like a Nazi concentration camp, overcrowded times with barbed wire and so on. There are many reasons, etc. My colleagues will talk about. So, but the draft book, we will work on it. Thank you very much. And I think that's more or less what I wanted to add here. Thanks very much again for listening. And sorry for all my little anecdotes, but it is a dark world. And that is partly why I'm interested in it. Because it touches on one of the most basic questions of any legal system. We can be proud of our company law and all of that, but how the law deals with this, with people who kill other people. The movies have been made and stories written about how you can lobotomize them or cut away part of their brain or whatever, but as far as we know, you have to protect society, you have to treat them without violating their dignity. Rehabilitation, what exactly does it mean? I have a nuanced view. If people who serve life sentences spend 2 years to make a desk, a very, very beautiful desk for the inspecting judge or for the minister, and during those 2 years they work on the desk instead of planning an escape or a next rape, perhaps that's already a step in the right direction. But of course, it's not us who can rehabilitate people. Last one, in America, not only the death sentence, but I was also astounded by these people who spend their life inmates studying the law, helping others to come out, and then you ask them how long you're here for, and they say forever, because they got these sentences of life without parole. So no matter what happens, now that is unconstitutional in South Africa. There must be light at the end of the tunnel. Of course, if after 20 years, 25 years, you must check very carefully whether this person can go out on parole or not. But I cannot see how I, as a judge, can sit and say, even if this person is completely different 25 years from now, he must still stay in jail the rest of his life. That is inhuman as far as South Africa is concerned and our constitution. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Judge.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will just add on to judges as quickly as possible so that you could also get some more clarity on some of the issues. The one on synergizing or trying to adopt the model of Concord or the OCJ, what you would say, has been extensively discussed during the process when we was taken by the hand by DPSA in developing this business model or this business case. So all these options was considered. May I add, Honorable Chair, that if Jigs had to go outside and appoint consultants to develop this business case, it would have cost us nothing less than 10 to 15 million rand to draft this document. I am proud to say that with the limited resources within the organization, within a year, we were able to present this document. Specifically in relation to MOUs, this business case is already in the hands of Secretariat of this portfolio committee, includes MOUs, where MOUs are being drafted by myself, signed with the National Commissioner in a transitional phase as we move out of DCS on various broad areas, covering human resource management, covering financial management and supply chain management, and also the information technology. It is in the pack. It is amongst the documents that we've submitted. The issue about equipment, specifically unused equipment, non-functional equipment within the environment, this is from time to time reported in our reports. It is contained in our reports, brought to the attention of the respective heads of centers, specifically cameras, non-functioning cameras, metal detectors, scanners, etc. This is where it starts, smuggling and bringing in contrabands, bringing in cell phones, etc., into the system, into the environment, and that's what Judge just alluded to now about Krishna. Let's talk about the time allocation at each center for an ICCV. This model is based on the public service contractual obligation 3.8, 5.8, 6.8. This is how our policy has been written in terms of the ICCV recruitment selection. We use the 3.8s for a small center, meaning 3 hours out of 8 hours is spent at a small center. It's defined in terms of numbers, Honorable Chair. How many inmates in that center? We will put an ICCV for that center. So, likewise, 5.8s for a medium center and 6.8s for a large center. So this aligns with the activities in terms of deliverables, reporting, etc. When we went back in the old model of this ICCV program, we had noticed that they were paid per hour. So once the 62 hours was up, you would find no inmates, Honorable Mr. Horn, you'd find no inmates being serviced by an ICCV because his time's up. He's not there. Our footprint now, in this new model of the ICCV, is that every day an ICCV is present, either for 3.8s, 5.8s, or 6.8s. Beyond that, we've extended their mandate, not only to report on complaints, but to deal with all issues relating to ICCVs and report accordingly on a daily basis, monthly basis, which is included in our quarterly reports. Now, the issue of corruption is a specialized niche. Judge has already alluded to this. This is an expert field. In our new business model, our business case, there is a new component that we've created, which is called the investigation unit. And in this unit, it's to be established, obviously, because we don't have it now. In this unit, we would now create a specialized unit dealing specifically with things like corruption, torture, etc. That would be dealing with these kind of investigations. Yes, the issue of USASA was already brought to our attention by the very sitting commission, the Zondo Commission. We have responded to them. They requested any information regarding the USASA issue. From time to time, our inspectors should report on the USASA issue. And these are all contained in our reports. We made this information also available to the Commission for consideration.
I think the question is, were you able to pick it up a long time ago before this?
Yes, the Honorable Chair. These were reported in our reports, but however, it was just reported. It was never taken forward. It is contained in our reports, like, let me give you an example, like the fencing of Kruitvlei in Bloemfontein, where it is not complete. So these were reported, it's contained in our assessment reports, but obviously that's where it stopped, it was not taken forward. We've now brought it to the attention of the Zondo Commission on their request.
Personally, I did not pick up anything. Ironically, the kitchens that were run by Bosasa looked 100 times better than the kitchens run by the department. And therefore, the Bosasa kitchens for me created a positive impression. For example, Johannesburg Central, the so-called Sun City. Now, of course, they did it because they brought in many people and so on, whereas the department, DPS, they don't have the same capacity. But I don't think, CEO, I'm not sure that we actually did much, but I'm not sure what we detected. Because, like I said earlier, for me, speaking as a judge and a person, it is very hard to make findings on high-level corruption without having a proper investigation. But that we report on fences and buildings and so on that are incomplete, and where there's a blame game on that, that we certainly do. But sorry to interrupt.
That is correct. That is correct. We didn't actually, in our reports, write on corrupt activities. But we did bring it to the attention of the detections of camera systems and fencing. Why we have only five provinces and what happens to the other four? We have aligned our footprints to that of DCS, where the only province now that is in absence and which is also contained in our business case is the L&M region, which is to be established once the business case goes through. Yes, the quarterly reporting. This, every quarter, our reports are submitted to portfolio. It is sent via our offices to the secretariat of portfolio. However, there has not been a request for us to come and discuss these quarterly reports at portfolio previously. I'm not sure for the reason, but I guess maybe there should be a decision taken going forward. However, on a quarterly basis, the judge, together with the minister, on a set time frame, every quarter meets and discusses the quarterly report. And the judge then indicates to the minister, from the start of the entire first month, second month, third month in that quarter, takes the minister through all the activities that have occurred in JIGS during that period, accounting for all areas in our operations. The visitors committee. These committees are established in terms of Section 94 of the Correctional Services Act. When I have arrived here, we have something like 56 visitors committee established seats throughout the country. We reviewed this, Honorable Chair. We've now brought it down to 39. These committees were sitting every month. We've now aligned again to the Act. The Act says every quarter. We've now aligned it to every quarter. And we have 36 of these VCs established. We can also make this available to the Secretariat for members to view. It is an active committee. It is also extended to members of communities. All stakeholders are invited to this VC meetings, and all unresolved complaints are dealt with at this. We can also make any specific minutes of VCs available on request if you require them. Honorable Mr. Swat that's left, the specific issue that this has been long outstanding, the issue of our business case with this portfolio, and he points that this should be expedited. We humbly request your assistance to ensure that this business case is promoted and submitted to the assessment committee in DCS, in DPW, so that they could then start the process. I'm given to understand, Honorable Chair, that a committee is already established. They only await our business case to come through. So I humbly request that this be considered, that this be taken up, so that the committee can then decide, is the government component model the right one? Or is it the public entity the right one that Advocate Mohammed suggested, Honorable Nema? Or is it a service delivery model that it should be considered? Or should it be a national department like OCJ? So this is where it should be decided by that very same committee. The last one, and I need to emphasize this, JIGS, when I arrived and even when Judge was here, our website was not functioning. It was under construction. This is an online reporting system that covers our mandatory reporting and also covers issues of where public needs to go and register a complaint or even family can engage us. Has not been working. We are dependent once again on DCS. We've engaged them on several occasions. We've reignited it. We've started the engine. We've created a new website. We presented it. It came live. It went dead again. For reasons beyond our control. Beyond that, Honorable Chair, we have phase two that's running behind the scenes. The phase two is to start again the engine of the mandatory reporting system, an online system including the ICCB program, so that everything is captured online and submitted to JIGS so that it could have live information. That phase is running. It's phase two. It has a project plan. The project plan ends at the end of September, and I'll be able to come back and report to you on the activities of that progress being done on that area. So complaints by public generally comes in by walkthroughs at our regional offices, which is covered in our service delivery model, and also it's supposed to be on our websites. We get written letters to us on a continuous basis from members of the public, and also these complaints are also registered at our VCs through our systems as we go through. The one unresolved grievance, I'm not sure about this because I only joined on the 1st of September 2017. We will come back. We will come back to you maybe with this information once I've checked. I know it has been reported in the annual report as one outstanding. Maybe I'll have to just check what is this grievance that, and maybe it's resolved, I'm not sure. But we can come back to you. The issue of 18 million underspent, as I've just indicated, at that time, it was 6 months left for the conclusion of that performance cycle. There was no monitoring systems in place to manage the funding or the budget allocation to JIGS. Now we have an M&E reporting system. Every month is a reporting generated on our spending trends, our spending patterns aligned with our procurement plans, and this is all on track. And as I've already indicated, for the current previous cycle, 2018-2019, we spent 93.3% of our budget. The issue of that Section 88, I think Judge has covered it. It's before the High Court in Western Cape. We await judgment. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
So, Honorable Chair, I think it's only left for me to inform the House of our investigations. We have only 5 inspectors currently in the whole organization covering 243 correctional centers. And those 5 inspectors also do duty as investigators. So it is very difficult for us to investigate all cases. So what we do is when we do investigate, we start with site visit and then we do our interviews, and we also produce all the documentation that are available. Our challenge currently is again with Department of Correctional Services officials, because they are not our employees. We cannot force them to even speak to us. So they will usually just give a statement, if they give a statement, on a murder or on a rape or whatever. They will just say to us, I did not see anybody assault anybody, and I also did not assault anybody myself. So that is usually the statement that we get. Luckily, because we do thorough investigations when we do that, we will take other statements and we will get a big picture. Then we will write a report, we will hand it to the inspecting judge, and at quarterly meetings with the minister is then discussed. Then we do work with SAPS. We work with the investigation, so we will ask. And then we also monitor the fact that it goes to the NPA, of course. And do that as
well. Honorable Chair, just 2 issues that was brought to my attention that I needed to address you on. The first one is relationships with ICCBs, with DCS officials. Yes, we've observed this. Currently, the Abadi is one of those instances. Where we're investigating such behavior. Therefore, we have now aligned the previous, they were employed on a 3-year contract. We now align the employment contract on a yearly basis based on performance with an extent. So we have now addressed this in our new model in terms of how we address the issue of relationship. Sometimes you find, yes, an ICCB might just get comfortable in the environment and don't report. There is an issue that the judge is currently busy with. The next one is the number of criminal cases Previously, Jigs should just report, and that's where it should stop. This practice has stopped, Honorable Chair. We've identified the top 10 serious cases within Jigs currently. We've had them now listed. We now engaged NDPP on all these top 10 matters through the judge, and now we are seeing progress on all these top 10 serious matters within Jigs, synergized with the relationship, as I alluded to earlier, with all stakeholders like SAP and NDPP. The trips by judge. Before I got here, this is one of them that I've inherited, where somebody wrote to DCS right down to some low levels requesting permission for the judge to fly overseas. This practice has stopped, Honorable Chair. I deal directly with the minister. I write directly to the deputy minister, and that's where the approvals come from for the Honorable judge to travel internationally or otherwise. Thank you.
Yes, I just add very quickly, Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. Yes, I don't want to make too much about the judges' trips. We are talking here about a conference of an international organization aligned to the United Nations two years ago, which was about mental inmates. And then this year there was one in Chile about sentencing, where we did not have any problems. The other visits that I did to Tunisia, even recently, I did separately, to some extent at my own cost, because I happened to be in the area. In Tunisia, I was there, for example, to advise on interpretation of their new constitution. That was the week just before the president died. In that process, I visited the prison, which looked extremely good, and everybody told me afterwards that I must not believe it because they show only the good parts. In Tunisia, they allege that they have 500 terrorists in prison there. The head of center said I could see anything I want, and when I said, can I just walk in there where the terrorists are, he said, no, that part I cannot. And their explanation was that the terrorists would see me as an enemy because I look strange. But we must be aware of problems in other countries. The psychologist who was a Tunisian of Arab descent said that the terrorists also regard him as an enemy because he looks like an Israeli. And some of the terrorists are very severely traumatized because they come from very violent situations in Syria, etc., etc. But so that looked very good, what they showed us, but we are not so sure they showed me the real thing. I was in Trinidad. Their oversight body consists of one person, a practicing attorney, who gets no money for it, who gets no secretarial assistance, nothing, who visit and can claim back his own expenses. Therefore, they, to some extent, rely on their ombud more. But the three outstanding little matters here. Thank you, Mr. Self. I forgot. The question is very important. Why only half a solution? The business, that of course, it's correct. And that is what the litigants also argued, that the business case, even if it goes through, will not take us all the way. And that the act itself needs revision. And we were advised for a long time by especially DPSA and Treasury that seeing that the legislative process will take so long, it could be quicker to get the business case on the road. And for a while, we thought the amendments, if any, would be very minimal. However, as we go on, we see more and more that amendments might be necessary. And therefore, I would be very happy if we can combine the two processes. But the money, I mean, not the money, the time is essential. The time is essential. We cannot wait many, four, three judges from now for anything to happen. While we were talking here about, Mr. D'Souza said we cannot force people to speak to us. There is, of course, a debate that our powers must be more in the legislation and that we must be able to make binding orders or recommendations or whatever.
for reasons that you will understand, I'm a bit hesitant. The stronger the powers are, the more the reports are taken on review. So if we make a recommendation that the area commissioner of whatever must be disciplined, and on page 73 there's a calculation error that we say there are 5 state patients and 6 other Medicaid patients, and therefore the total is 12. A review court, it will be argued that this judge obviously did not apply his mind because he cannot even add up 5 and 6. So I am hesitant with powers that are too forcefully binding, because then the only way out of it is a court of review, which you see happening in practice around the public protector. But we could, for example, write in that officials have to speak, but they cannot refuse to speak to us. That kind of thing, because as Mr. D'Souza says, their attitude is kind of, we are doing our own investigation. And then it is very difficult for us. And even now I am negotiating, literally, with the National Commissioner, because we took each other in confidence a while ago about a certain situation. And you will hear more about that later. The reporting, the act says, on every inspection, the judge must report to the minister and to this committee, to Parliament. The every inspection thing is not going to work, because some of our inspections are fairly innocuous. Mr. D'Souza didn't mention now, but the level on which things work quite well is when our inspectors visit a centre, and it's a full 2-day exercise. They tick many blocks and forms and so on. Then we first send the report to the centre, isn't it?
Yes.
So if we say, 12 showers are not working, they can respond, and they say, no, there are only 11 showers, and we've repaired them in the meantime. So on that level, the cooperation is quite good, on the lowest level. Higher up, it becomes more and more difficult to see results. The Act says every inspection, so what has happened in the past, before my time, is they put it together in quarterly reports. And somewhere the practice developed that they submitted to the National Commissioner, and from there to... So with National Commissioner Modise, I had a situation where I complained about the laptop, and then he said, but I have not received your quarterly report yet. We don't owe the Commissioner any reports. And what we tried last year is to say to the Minister, let us hand the quarterly report to you in person. That will make sure that we see you 4 times a year. That is about 50%. It is useful if DCS are present at that situation, because we will give it to the National Commissioner. But we cannot rely on the National Commissioner to give it to Parliament. So we have no problem giving it to the Department. And what we've said now twice, first to the Deputy Minister, then to the Minister, is please let us also invite the Commissioner to these meetings. Otherwise, it's he says, she says, and so on. Let us all be together. So last week, the minister agreed that the quarterly report idea is good. When there's reports that say something special, like St. Albans, or then, of course, we will do it separately. And what we are busy with are so-called theme reports. In other words, a report not on a specific inspection, but on an ongoing phenomenon, like violence, and the one that's imminent, and it does be imminent for a long time, because every time we get new information is about the state of facilities. So I would be, we must make sure from our side that the quarterly reports reach you, and we would be very happy, I or my successor or whoever, I'm sure, to meet with you also. I know your program is very full, but to meet on a regular basis. The annual report is coming up soon. Last one, Mr. Self asked about Section 7.1 and the cell sign of the size of cells and so on. Also not as easy as it looks like. For example, I visit a prison in, if I remember correctly, a center in Stanger. Then the head of the center says, the facilities are completely inadequate. This cell has a ordinary ceiling, whereas it should have a concrete ceiling. The inmates can escape through the ceiling, therefore they took away their beds. So they sleep on mattresses on the floor, so that they cannot stand on the bed. Now, I don't know if they cannot stand on each other's shoulders or what, I don't know. I see my colleague nod. This is literally true. Then I go back to head office. Then I say, where does it say what ceiling a cell must have? And then I'm being sent from one person to another to another. Then we have a document. We had a researcher previously, not Miss Mchali, but just a temporary helper for me. Then she shows them a whole policy document. Then they say, no, that one is dated. And I cannot help you, you must meet with so-and-so. So it, I find it hard to, quite frankly, to find out only what size does the cell have to be in terms of their, of course there's Mandela rules and international law and all of that, but to find out exactly what their policy is, because we accept that they cannot always adhere to everything because of the overcrowding. We accept that. A report which you will get at some point is, of course, on the Mbweni Supermax. But I can give you 2 points there. That is the supermax. There are a number of supermax facilities in the world, of which this is one. It is controversial worldwide. That is now for people who are escape risks, etc. Some of the most serious creature was there for a while. This man who was important in the Cape, George Havel Thomas, is there. I've had with him several interviews. Our concerns there are the hours of solitary confinement, not in accordance with the Mandela rules. When I said that on television, Mr. Smallberger said, the Mandela rules are not law. Mandela rules are not law. The Correctional Services Act is. But the Correctional Services Act might be unconstitutional if somebody builds a proper argument. And it is not for this judge to make a finding, I'm not a court. But we can raise the concern. The other issue that we do have, I don't know if you've been to it, Mbweni, the facility itself looks better than many others. These stories about underground cells and so on, that's not true. But people are locked up for 23 hours out of 24. Mandela rules, I think, say 22 or 21. And they are only taken out to shower and to exercise. The process is perhaps necessary. Thick steel door, small opening like a little mailbox. So you turn around, you put your hands out, they cuff you behind. Then they open the cell, then they take you to the exercise yard. Then you walk into it, cuffed, turn around, put your hands through, they uncuff you. Now you're free there on your own, never with anybody else. And then the same procedure happens with showers and so on. What inmates tell us is that, by the way, the regional commissioner, who is now dismissed, but he's won several cases against the department before, he, in a way, proudly told us when I visited with the Public Service Commission that almost everybody there is on antidepressants. George Chevelle Thomas says he's not on antidepressants. He's on antiretrovirals and all of those things, and every time I see him, he looks a bit smaller. But that whole situation is a very serious one. We are not saying relax the security, not at all. But we have two concerns. The one is the length of the hours, especially because the inmates say this hour does not always happen, because they are lazy and the officials are lazy. So if the official comes by and says, you really want to go exercise today or shower, and you say, no, forget about it, I want to lie on my bed and stare at the ceiling, then it happens like that. And the other issue, which is serious, and it does to some extent implicate the regional commissioner who is now dismissed, is the criteria by which they allow people. But you will see our report. They have a very strict set of criteria, which is understandable. But we know of a number of people where those criteria were not followed. A person, for example, who was serving a long sentence, parole after 18 years. We interviewed him. I was not particularly impressed, but he was out on parole, broke his parole conditions, and ended up in Ebongweni, and was released from Ebongweni 5 days later. When I asked the regional commissioner who sent him there, he said, I did. I said, what are the reasons? He said, I cannot remember. I will look in the file. I said, how was he released? He said, I cannot remember. I will look in the file. This man told me a court judgment. He had a court judgment to release him. I said, bring us the court judgment. He also disappeared. To this day, this question of mine happened 2.5 years ago. To this day, we've never received the reasons. And one of the investigations we are busy with are allegations by a former employee of torture. Okay, so we will come back to you on that one. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for this briefing. First of all, I think on behalf of the committee, we must thank you for the work that you are doing under difficult conditions. We will refer this matter to the subcommittee to comprehensively deal with all the issues. For instance, we need to deal with the issue of reviewing the legislation in a comprehensive way. We also need to deal with the issue of the business processes, the model. I think there was an issue that was raised by Honorable Staff where we would need to bring yourselves and correctional services so that we can fast track some of the issues that are not really are supposed to be an issue. The issues of refunds and approval of checks and all of those issues. But we would want to have a situation where the pupils of the act, even if it is unconstitutional or it might be found to be unconstitutional, is not really frustrated in practice by officials. I think it would be important that when the act was passed, it was meant to that JICS must have an oversight of the correctional services. And we would not want a situation where that oversight and independence is compromised. Because at the end of the day, we would want a situation where people who go to prison come out of the prison system being better people, but not being hardened criminal more than they were before they entered the system. So how they are treated can have an effect on how and what type of citizens they become after they've served their sentences. We think that a lot has been done that we need a subcommittee to interact with some of these issues that you have raised and the subcommittee reports to the committee. And we will also interact with the minister, for instance, trying to check how far is the legislation. Because although the committee can develop a legislation, but it is always ideal, especially if the legislation is going to have financial implications, that the executive does the legislation. We will also interact with the minister in that regard. It might also be important to interact with the portfolio committee of public works because some of the problems are not your big problems that need massive infrastructure. There are problems where you find that the tap is not closing, and then it's there for that thing is not dealt with for 6 or 8 months. And those are some of the things that I know public works is also guilty of neglect in that regard. But I think it's important that the subcommittee is going to be seized with the matter, with these matters, and they are going to also be interacting with ourselves and with the with correctional services, because we think that some of the issues which just need a tighter oversight over there. But we'd like to thank you very much for this briefing. I think we have absorbed a lot of information, and it's quite clear that there are a lot of challenges in correcting the system as a whole. And that is why we decided to dedicate subcommittee to focus on task correctional services. But thank you very much. Thank you, Jack. Thank you to your team. Continue with your hard work. Honorable members, 1 minute. I was informed that there is generally a challenge with us getting hold of Gender Commission. But I'm told that it has been solved now. So tomorrow we'll meet with the Gender Commission, and the briefing on correctional services on sexuality and overcrowding tomorrow. We'll be meeting at 9:30 for the same day, 8:27.